This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with industry experts and SG2 thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we all expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
AMCs, academic medical centers, walk a tightrope that really balances healthy tensions, and one of those is maintaining a margin while serving as a public health leader.
Hello, and welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I'm your host, Kelly Richard, and today we'll be talking about the latest in healthcare partnerships. I have with me Senior Director of Medicine and Surgery, AMC-focused, and resident scientist on our intelligence team, Justin Cassidy. Justin and I recently joined forces together with Mike Humphrey, who leads our AMC work, and Tanya Bosco, who leads much of our AMC consulting, on a webinar for AMC partnerships. Thanks so much, Justin, for taking the time to chat today.
Thank you, Kelly. Honored to be here.
So we'll kind of just do a little bit of a back and forth. The first question, and maybe it's a good way to level set, is when we're talking about partnerships, what do we mean by that?
Kelly, in a lot of ways, partnerships are really the antonym of disruption, which of course is a major strategic focus. It's really folks collaborating against some sort of common threat, whatever that may be. Partnerships are really the how of how things get done, not the why. The why is the mission and ambition of the institution, and the partnerships are really the means to achieve that.
That's a really great point. We had done some legacy work on this in the last couple of years, and as I had been, you know, reviewing that before starting my most recent research, I found that sort of the strategic intent was the thing that had really changed. I think that we're seeing the same types of partnerships in many forms. Systems are partnering together. They're partnering with outside organizations. They're partnering with community-based organizations. Justin, I've been doing research on partnerships for the last couple of months, and that's largely been a qualitative endeavor. And we'll get to some of those findings here in a bit. But when you and I went to start doing this webinar, you actually did something really clever, I thought, which was you analyzed data to quantify some of the trends that we've been seeing. And so I would love it if you would walk us through a little bit about what you did with that analysis and what were some of the key things that you found.
Absolutely, Kelly. The analysis that we conducted was pretty simple, I guess. We downloaded 850 different partnership press releases over the past year. And this is from November 2019 to the end of October 2020. With the hypothesis that we would see some sort of a shift in January, March, and April for obvious reasons in 2020. And indeed, that is what we saw. But was fascinating, it differed by partnership type. The key finding was that more traditional partnerships, where health systems are sort of filling in a gap in their system of care, those partnerships and service line specific partnerships really dipped down starting in February of 2020. And those have still not recovered as of end of October 2020. We have also seen an uptick of collaboratives with so-called frenemies, with competitors starting collaborations, often within regional networks or cohorts. We've also seen an uptick of innovation and new business ventures for obvious reasons as well. And really starting in April, a strong uptick in community health partnerships.
Couple of things there. First, I really love that it's press releases because it does kind of get us to the why behind these partnerships. Sure, it's an indicator. They haven't really carried them through. We don't really know how successful they're going to be, but it does kind of tell us what organizations are aiming for, what's most important to them. The other thing that I think is really interesting in sort of thinking this through is obviously we're thinking about COVID-19 because are we ever not talking about it or thinking about it?
I know.
But one of the things that I think is really interesting, and I found this in the research that I did too, was the idea of the frenemy. And wow, has that become even more important right now in the face of COVID-19. Some of the examples that I saw when I was really researching this were efforts to share data across different organizations so that they could better understand hospital capacity, better figure out testing capacity. These are huge logistical things to set up, and organizations had to do that in a really short period of time. So I think that's great. And then when we're thinking about those more traditional partnerships, and I think we talked about that service line, we saw a huge dip in those. And that makes all the sense in the world, right? Because all of those service lines, those elective procedures took a real nosedive.
Exactly. Business as usual really took a change.
And so to a degree, it's kind of exciting to see what a major event like this, if I can come up with any sort of a positive spin over the last 9 months about COVID-19, what it can kind of push different organizations to do. When I started this research and started talking with health systems, as well as looking at different healthcare companies, I found that the current environment has sort of been magnified by COVID rather than completely driven by it in many cases. A lot of these organizations had planned these partnerships months and months ago, but it seemed like some of them even got moved up or the why behind them became even more urgent. But I found that the makeup of the partnerships hadn't dramatically changed, and there were three sort of strategic whys that really rose to the top. I'll kind of just go through these, but you can kind of feel free to interject any specific examples or anything about these that you think specifically applies to AMCs. That first one that I'm thinking about is shoring up the safety net or serving in a public health role. Does that resonate on the academic medical center side?
Gosh, yes, Kelly. AMCs, academic medical centers, walk a tightrope that really balances healthy tensions. And one of those is maintaining a margin while serving as a public health leader.
Absolutely. And then the next one was improving patient experience. And a lot of the ways that we're seeing that is through data, but health systems have really lagged behind, and healthcare in general in that space, in terms of figuring out how to leverage data to make that patient journey as seamless as possible. Are you seeing that on the AMC side?
Yes, for sure. This is happening in a couple places. The first is the new incidence of digital platforms. As we've seen, some of the more notables are those by University of California Health and Mayo Clinic. But everyone's sort of getting in on the game of playing with data to really personalize the patient experience and target it. One of the major examples that we've been following is that merger between Teladoc and Livongo to Teladoc Health, but also looking at the senior leadership of the Livongo team and what they've sort of jumped ship to set up this new entity called Health Assurance Acquisition Corp. And that's in part with partnership with Jefferson Health and Stephen Klasko, the CEO there. It's really to create a whole different type of patient experience. It's really consumer-centric, data-driven, using cloud-based data, and it's sort of more continuous and proactive way, which is really sort of exciting. And then the second from the AMC front is the emergence of new concierge care models. There are a large number of them, but case in point here is The Ohio State University's partnership with One Medical to sort of expand beyond just bricks and mortar access to the digital realm and having a membership and employer-based model that offers seamless coordinated care that's convenient to wherever patients work, shop, live, and click.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, Kelly, this is what you said earlier about accelerating what was already in play, what was already top of mind from a strategic planning perspective, and seeing that follow through. I'll give a quick example. Our Vizient colleagues gave a survey to academic medical center CFOs and CSOs. And last year, at least, patient experience was the top sort of strategic priority for AMCs.
Absolutely. The last sort of strategic why is transforming care delivery. And this is something that AMCs are able to do in a way almost that no one else really can.
And there's so many examples here, Kelly. One of the really interesting ones is the idea of decentralized clinical trials. Again, not necessarily new. It's an acceleration, however, to gain access for patients amidst the pandemic to this cutting-edge clinical care. And an example would be University of Colorado Health and Children's Hospital of Colorado with ClinOne. But there are many of these in play, so don't want to really highlight this one as being necessarily as unique as any others. But it's not just having patients that are nearby that urban academic medical center and kind of going in occasionally in person or not. This is actually expanding the catchment beyond that immediate area geographic proximity across the country, but even across the world, in order to bring more equitable access to underserved populations, to so-called innovation desert markets. That's a really cool one. The other that's really kind of changing care delivery in a new way, it's University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, what they've been doing to help enable safe reentry of university students. And they're calling this the SHIELD program. And many of you have probably heard on the line about how U of I has been really ramping up their COVID-19 testing efforts, the idea of targeting everyone in their faculty, student, and staff population 2 or 3 times a week for surveillance testing for COVID-19. to add an extra layer of safety to university reentry. But it really wasn't just that. It was this multimodal approach of targeting the right populations, the cadence of testing, figuring out where logistically to place a saliva-based test. They have, I think, 20 locations across campus. You can't really walk anywhere on campus without running by one. And then, of course, an app that facilitates contact tracing that also fed in such that if you did test positive, you would be contacted within 30 minutes and then quarantined. And then this app also allows access to university buildings. It's a sort of a key card that if you don't test, you'll get denied entry. So there's kind of this multimodal approach was really essential there. But the number of different folks that partnered to pull it off is terrific. And they are looking to expand to other universities and potentially throughout the state of Illinois and even other types of semi-closed communities like military bases or employers, factory settings, and so on.
We had talked about this before, that possibly this app that is letting students into buildings that could be used more broadly. For example, maybe you can't get onto the train to go downtown to work unless you have had a negative test and they're able to see that, or maybe even have had a vaccine most recently. I'm sure that there's all sorts of regulatory issues that could potentially creep up here, but the university setting is a really interesting microcosm for better understanding how we can open up economically after such a blunt shutdowns from the pandemic.
Just think about what the NBA has already done and what the NFL is doing right now in terms of testing and offering this as a sort of alternative revenue stream is something that is top of mind for some, but maybe this is actually a community health partnership.
The one other example that I thought was really interesting that I'd love to talk a little bit about is really the role of the AMC in public health. And we had a couple examples of organizations that were leveraging social media to get information out there. Tell us a little bit about that, because I think increasingly social media is where a lot of people get their information.
Yeah, Kelly, that's incredibly insightful. And here we're calling this misinformation combat. That is, the front lines of that battle would be social media. That's where a lot of these conspiracy theories are sort of spawned and perpetuated. And so kind of attacking that at the source is really important. And we have so many examples across the country of AMCs. But one of our favorites is Dr. Bob Walkner at UCF has taken to Twitter, tweets regularly, has well over 150,000 followers. They also post their Department of Internal Medicine Grand Rounds to YouTube every week. And this gets a tremendous number of views across the world, over 70,000 views every week for these Grand Rounds. And I kind of have to admit, I'm one of them. I think this is a great source of really vetted information that changes as the research does. And that's pretty tricky for many to get a grip on, but science is an iterative process and we're always kind of learning more, and that we'll never have complete knowledge building upon what is known to make better decisions is very important. And I think a good example of that is just testing cadence. When after exposure should you get tested? And they had a really well done show a couple months ago where they showed it was about that 5-day window is where there was a lot of value to getting tested. But if you got tested within the 1 to 3 days, the virus hadn't really accumulated to a load that it would even be detected. So it really had a low value during that time. But things like this is they're continuing to learn more in the research department in real time, sort of disseminating that knowledge, not only to your internal hospital community, but the wider city that you're located in, and potentially even sort of international, to help drive policy decision and safe reentry of society.
Fantastic. And there is that aspect where you're incorporating science in real time and really transforming how care is delivered.
It's transformative. Kelly, it's transformative in its transparency. And that's what people really like, is seeing the data directly and being very upfront in terms of hospital capacity and so on. That sort of builds bridges within the community to build trust.
Certainly. So, Justin, just to wrap us up here, if there were a few key takeaways for academic medical centers about how to get started and sort of the best way to evaluate your partnerships and about evaluating your strategic intent behind them, how would you sum that up?
Well, really align with the three arms of AMCs, of course, education, research, and clinical enterprise. Educate at scale using social media, transparently disseminate what your leaders are learning and what they're understanding in real time to your faculty, student, and staff, and also wider community. On the research side, thinking about decentralizing research, we gave the example of clinical trials at scale, but really thinking about doing that to expand equitable access to these cutting-edge therapies of the future. And finally, on the sort of care redesign piece and the clinical arm, thinking about making technology, ensuring that it's interoperable with the community's needs, and also thinking about digital primary care or aligning with digital health partnerships to build that patient experience, to target whatever digital health modality it is to the disease, but also the individual patient demographic that lies on top of that.
Absolutely. Well, Justin, thank you so much for joining today. This is such an exciting topic, and I'm sure that we'll continue to cover it as we learn more and more.
Thank you so much for the privilege.
Anytime. Well, thanks so much for listening, and please subscribe or follow if you want to hear more. I also want to recommend another Vizian podcast, The Modern Practice. It is on Vizian's Medical Leadership channel and provides a clinical perspective into current issues affecting healthcare today. Thank you and stay healthy.
This has been another great episode of SG2 Perspectives, where industry experts and SG2 thought leaders explore the drivers of tomorrow's healthcare strategies to inform today's decision makers. Contact us anytime by sending an email to sg2perspectives@sg2.com. We'd love to hear from you. SG2 revolutionized healthcare demand forecasting with the Impact of Change forecast, and today, we're the industry's premier strategy advisory firm. To learn more, visit sg2.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.